Hello, good evening and welcome everyone to this meeting of Stafford Borough Council Planning Committee. My name is Brendan McKeown and I will be chairing this meeting. The meeting will be recorded, or is being recorded, and will be available via the Borough Council's website should you wish to listen to it all over again in the future. To my right are officers from the Planning Department, and to my left, officers from Legal and Corporate Services. All applications being considered tonight will be considered in accordance with National Planning Policy Framework and the current Stafford Borough Council Local Plan. Each application will be presented by a planning officer, after which I will invite any person who has registered to speak, whether in support or objection, and they will have up to 3 minutes to speak, and we'll give you a nod when you're 2 minutes into that 3 minutes. Ward members who will speak are entitled to speak for 5 minutes. I remind everyone that we do not enjoy the same freedom of speech as they enjoy in the House of Commons, so mind your P's and Q's. And finally, if you have a mobile phone, please turn it off or switch it to stun gun or whatever it is these days. And so, to the agenda. Minutes of the last meeting?
19th of July, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. All okay, everyone? Apologies?
Yes, Chairman. Apologies received from Councillor Gareth Jones, who is substituted tonight by Councillor Roy James, and Councillor Marnie Phillips, who is substituted by Councillor Mrs. Beattie.
Thank you. Declarations of interest or lobbying? Okay, which particular item?
In my case, Chairman, it's the land at Silkmore Lane, just to say that I'm a member of the Internal Drainage Board, but I've no other interest in that.
The same item, Chairman. I was asked to sign the calling by Councillor Edgler, in fact, but having read the report, I have an open mind on the subject and I haven't predetermined it, so I would like to carry on and hear the discussion and make my mind up when I've heard the debate.
Okay. And I've had direct communication from the agents for the application. I will also be stepping down from the chair for the last item, 23/37-11, and Councillor Tony Nixon will be taking my place.
Can I just add, I've also had seen a copy of the agent's representation.
Yeah, I myself, okay. Which I got as an email from...
Just arrived.
Yes. I think it's come through John, but I think it arrived directly to me as well. And yourself?
No, this is something separate. I called in the Eagle Car Park one, but I shall be staying on the committee, I shan't be. And I have the opinions expressed and the calling are those of the proposed council and the residents rather than myself, so I haven't expressed an opinion.
Okay, thank you. Any more? Okay, right, first item on the agenda is land at Silkmore Lane in Stafford, called in by Councillor Cook, Councillor Edgler, Cross and Phillips. Who's taking this one?
Thank you, Chairman. This application is for the erection of a 75-bed care home on vacant land next to the Co-op supermarket car park in Silkmore Lane. Vehicular access will be taken from the existing shared access adjoining Silkmore Lane to serve the care home and the Co-op convenience store. The access will be 6 metres wide, adjoining the northern side of the private access road. The proposed building would be 2.5 or 3 storeys in height. When I say or, I mean elements of it will be 2.5, and elements will be 3 storeys, and would have a maximum height of 11 metres. The building would have a depth of between 14 and 25 metres and a width of 80 metres. A total of 33 car parking spaces are proposed, together with 12 cycle spaces. The planning history and the relationship between the the approved scheme and consideration of the current application is quite complicated, and therefore a timeline has been shown in the agenda in front of you to explain the history. And this is relevant because there's a lawful fallback position, which is a material consideration. The Highway Authority previously objected to the application on the grounds of insufficient car parking. Accordingly, an amended site plan was submitted that increased the number of car parking spaces from 27 to 33. But at the time the report was finalised, the Highway's Form X response had not been received. However, officers, and by that I mean planning officers, consider the number to be acceptable. The Form X was received on Monday, and it raises no objections, subject to two conditions and the payment of a travel plan monitoring fee of £10,000. But it also makes five comments, and I'll basically summarise those. Firstly, it suggested that at least 12 more parking spaces should ideally be provided. Secondly, it identifies as no parking for an ambulance on the amended plan. Thirdly, suggests the disabled bays are marked out incorrectly. Fourthly, says there's no indication of delivery refuse or refuge vehicles being able to safely manoeuvre within the site. And fifth, it says there should preferably be a pedestrian connection to the site. It then goes on to say that Highways would normally require those five points to be rectified before any approval. However, the location of the vehicle and pedestrian access is 60 metres on a private road from the adopted highway, Silmore Lane, and although it's not considered ideal, any issues caused by the lack of these facilities would not affect highway safety due to the development's location. It points out that Silmore Lane is protected by double yellow lines. There's also bus stops within 100 metres of the development, and a large private car park for the co-op store. And says, although these are not considered highway safety issues, the points may wish to be considered by the planning authority. So that was received on Monday. Yesterday, the agent responded. First of all, providing a copy of an earlier email from Highways agreeing that 33 spaces would be acceptable. Also pointing out that a minibus space is provided near to the entrance and that could accommodate an ambulance if necessary. Thirdly, disagreeing that the dimension of the disabled spaces are not drawn correctly. Fourthly, pointing out that tracking drawings of fire engine and refuse truck were submitted within the transport statement submitted with the application. And finally, explaining why pedestrian access is proposed via the co-op site, but not directly from Silmore Lane, and it's essentially down to security and him being able to control the access points. You'll notice in the report that flood risk is a significant issue. Policy N1 states development should not be located in areas of flooding or contribute to flooding elsewhere. Policy N2, the local plan, requires developments to provide sustainable drainage systems, which is reiterated in policy Stafford 1, and says that development should not harm but enhance water courses in the town. So the application site is situated in flood zone 3B, which is the functional floodplain. The Environment Agency did not object to the approved extant scheme, i.e. the 2016 scheme, and simply recommended conditions. However, the site was not considered to be within flood zone 3B by the Leigh Local Flood Authority or the Environment Agency back in 2015 when they provided their consultation response, and accordingly planning permission was granted. Originally, the Environment Agency objected to this application. However, in the light of the fallback position, they no longer object. Overall, the flood risk assessment confirms that the development on the site can take place in a way which would not materially affect other... properties or cause flood issues elsewhere. The design and the slight reduction of the footprint and hard standing creates an overall benefit in floodplain terms compared to the current scheme which could be implemented. And this is summed up quite well, I think, in the report in the planning balance and conclusion on page 17. And in effect, it is saying that the principle of development has been established by virtue of the extant planning permission for the 76-bed unit. As I said before, that is a material consideration. The site is within the settlement boundary of Stafford, and the proposed development is considered to constitute sustainable development and would meet an identified specialist housing need. The care home provision would also provide good quality contribution to the housing supply, and this has significant weight in the planning balance. Whilst the flood zone is located within flood zone 3B, the principle of a residential care home has already been accepted, and the approved extant scheme is a legitimate fallback position which is supported by the Environment Agency. The design, layout and scale of the scheme would be acceptable, and given the distances between other properties, no undue harm would be posed to adjoining occupiers as a result of the development. And finally, the impact of the increased movements on the local highway network has been assessed, and the proposed trips will not have a significant impact on the highway. And as I said before, parking is considered on balance to be acceptable. Therefore, Chairman, it's recommended the application be approved, subject to a unilateral undertaking in respect of the travel plan monitoring fee, the conditions listed in the report, and two additional conditions recommended by the Highway Authority in Reform X. One is in relation to the development shall not be brought into use until the existing site access off Silkmore Lane, which shall include access crossings between the site and the pavement edge, has been made redundant as a consequence the development is permanently closed and the access crossing reinstated as virgin footway before the development is first occupied, and the tactile paving on the footpath on Silkmore Lane adjacent to the development shall be repositioned to accommodate the closed access. And secondly, prior to the commencement of construction, a construction environmental management plan shall be submitted to and approved in writing. The approved management plan shall include details relating to construction access, hours of construction, routing of heavy goods vehicles, delivery times, and the location of contractors' compounds, cabins, material storage areas, and contractors' parking, and a scheme for the management and suppression of dust and mud from construction activities, including the provision of a vehicle wheel wash. It shall also include a method of restoration of the site, and all site operations shall then be undertaken strictly in accordance with the approved construction environmental management plan for the duration of the construction programme. You will notice that there's already a similar but not the same condition, and as you've noted from other applications considered, This is a recommendation of highways, and you've got another one which is a recommendation of environmental health. They don't do exactly the same thing. So now turning to the screen. First of all, that's the Red Edge site plan. You've got Silkmore Lane to the right, immediately to the right of the site, which you can see on the aerial photograph. Got four photographs here. The first one is within the site, looking to the northwest. You can see the edge of the co-op building on the left-hand side of the photograph. Second one is looking to the northeast, across the yard of a commercial use towards a three-storey housing beyond that. So the site boundary is basically where you can see the palisade fence. Then there's the yard area, and then to the rear of that there's the brick wall, and then the housing. Third photograph is in the southwesterly direction. It's towards the Co-op supermarket and the car park, which is obscured by the fence along the boundary, the temporary fence along the boundary. And the fourth image, this is the commercial premises next door to the site, and that's viewed from Siltmore Lane. The site boundary, which in this case is a wooden fence, you can see just to the left of the photograph. Moving on to the plans, these are the proposed elevations. So the main elevations are to the southwest and to the northeast. The southwest is towards the co-op site. The next three are floor plans, so this is the ground floor, the first floor, and then you see the reduced area used on the second floor, hence why some of it's three stories, some of it's two and a half. The next two plans are actually aerial photographs supplied by the applicant, but they're quite useful in showing the context of the site. So this, on this one in particular, you can see it's looking in a northwesterly direction, so you can see the site in the centre, the co-op and the co-op car park to the left of that, the commercial use to the right of the site, and then, say, behind that, three-storey houses. So the access, as I said before, to the site will be off the private access that goes into the co-op from Siltmore Lane, which you can see in existence there. And that's another aerial photograph from a slightly different angle. This one's looking generally in a northerly direction, but again you can see the relationship of the site to the surrounding uses. And here we have a layout showing the landscaping. You see, and the car park. You see the car park. Car parking is around the access point and to the front and end of the building. And then you've got landscaping around the edges. And I think this plan shows the hard landscaping, so the not just the car parking layout, but paths around the site as well. As I say, Chairman, the application is recommended for approval subject to the conditions listed, the two I've read out, and to a unilateral undertaking in respect of travel plan monitoring. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I believe we have someone speaking in support, Mr. Patrick Downs. Well, you have 3 minutes, and we'll give you a nod when you're 2 minutes into it. Take your time. Let me know when you're ready.
Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to address you. We are delighted that officers have recommended that planning permission be granted, and we strongly support this recommendation. The principle of a care home development was established in 2016. It is now accepted by your officers that that scheme has been implemented following a successful appeal by the applicant in January 2023, for which costs were awarded. This represents the legitimate fallback position against which the current application must be determined. We have supplied your officers with legal opinion to confirm this point. This explains that there is no tenable reason to withhold planning permission. Of course, refusal of this planning application would not prevent a care home from being constructed on the site. Your officers will explain further. What you're being asked to address this evening is, in effect, minor design changes to the elevations and layout of the state's plan permission, which has been implemented. The application improves the approved scheme by reduction of hard standing and build footprint, with a consequent material benefit in drainage terms. The site is classed as a brownfield site and is clearly situated within the settlement boundary of Stafford in a sustainable location, good access to local facilities and public transport, including cycling and footpath network. The location of the site presents a genuine opportunity to use alternative means of transport to the motor car. The proposal is an important element of the Council's objectives to deliver for the care needs of the community. Latest reports on need demonstrate a shortfall of 125 wet room beds in Stafford, but that supply includes the extent permission of 76 beds, so if nothing is built on the site, the shortfall will increase further. Furthermore, the scheme provides economic benefits to the construction and employment of staff. On the matter of drainage and flooding, it should be noted that the application scheme results in a significant improvement when compared to the extent planning permission, with hard surfacing reduced by some 600 square metres and the building footprint by 15 square metres. Finished floor levels will be constructed to an appropriate level to ensure that no occupants will be materially affected by any flooding, should it ever occur, and the scheme has been designed so as not to impact upon the surrounding area.
1 minute.
The EA has confirmed their agreement to this position. We have seen the representation from the Highway Authority. Many of these matters were dealt with in the original consultations on the scheme. Mounted car parking was agreed on these negotiations and has been designed to meet experienced operator needs. Tracking information was supplied in the original application submission, demonstrating there are no problems. Other issues can be controlled by conditions as recommended and discussed earlier this evening. Accordingly, I respectfully request that you resolve to grant plan permission for this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I believe Councillor Cook, do you wish to speak?
Yes, please, Chair.
If you'd like to take a seat.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. Just for the record, there's been no one registered to object to this as a member of the public, so we go straight to the ward member.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you for this opportunity. Chairman, much water has flowed under the bridge since this planning application emerged several years ago now. I called it in then for further discussion about flooding risks. At the start, as has been mentioned before, the Environment Agency objected to the application on those grounds. But since then, the Environment Agency has reconsidered its position, as you've mentioned, on the basis of newer information and calculations, and has withdrawn its original objection, as long as certain conditions are included in the permission. Now, the Sound Penk Internal Drainage Board, the IDB, has also requested conditions regarding surface water. I remain, I have to say, Chairman, somewhat uneasy about the flooding risks, but I am aware that if, and I underline the if, the committee agreed to reject the application on flooding grounds, there would, I'm sure, be an appeal which the council would lose and which could well mean a further loss of council taxpayers' money. I therefore, Chair, look instead for confirmation from this committee that all the conditions stipulated by the EA and the Sound Tank IDB with regard to flooding and surface water be included in Stafford Borough Council's decision. And that's the end of my statement, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Cook. Anyone wish to open the batting? Councillor Beattie.
I rather endorse what Councillor Cook has said. It seems to me that on page 17, paragraph 8, concluding comments, sets out the whole scenario. We have the principle established, we've got an improved layout, we've got a fallback position, To me, it's a no-brainer. We should give it planning approval, and I make that proposal.
We'll have a little conversation beforehand. Thank you. Any Councillor Frank-James?
Yes. Those that have lived in Stafford for a long while and remember that the old Southend Club flooding in this area and going out of business. They recently built the houses to the right out of this planning application, and they have to empty our bottom because they tilted, the building did, and they have to do a lot of rework on it. It's a very, very volatile area. Flooding happens on the front and the back. Anybody who's come down Radford Bank like I've done today, you'll see the fields are all flooded opposite. It's a very big flooded area. I just wonder whether the extra roof space is going to create a further flooding problem for the area.
Thank you. Anyone want to mention the latest information from the highways?
I'll just ask one. Yeah. It's a very tiny point. On page 5, the proposal refers to a 75-bed care home. But on page 17, it refers to a 76-bed care home. I mean, I know it's only mine, but I'd like to know which is which.
It is 75.
It is 75. This is page 17 is the wrong way. Thank you, Chairman.
Can I just ask, John, you look at the height of the building. If you look at the Co-op, is it going to be higher than the Co-op one? And then, yeah, I thought you were going to say that. And then the other one was, you know, the houses beyond, which are 3 stories high, is it below that? I think it is, isn't it? Yes, I know you hate me.
Thank you. Well, as I said, the height of the maximum height of the building is 11 metres.
Yeah.
Might surprise you to know, but I don't know how high the Co-op is. And I don't think we can see it sufficiently well on that photograph to look. I would guess that is less than 11 metres.
Okay.
It certainly looks like less than 11 metres. And then if we look... if you then look at image 4, you can see the housing is actually built at a higher level.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
there's no
overlook.
Yeah. No, okay.
My guess would be that housing is about the same height as the building proposed.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah, on page 10 under 2, paragraph 4, it said the height would be in keeping with the surrounding area. Probably off towards the housing, yes, not necessarily towards the Co-op in the other direction. So, Councillor Spencer.
I kind of agree with what Councillor Beattie was saying. I think the main issue is all appears to be the flooding, which on page 18 19 appears to be mitigated against with the analysis that's been taking place and the raising of site levels to bring it over 100 year plus 50% risk. So to me, I think the flooding of the development is no longer an issue. If just these are going to be the original level, going to be the development levels. And then it also goes on to say that the area doesn't affect flooding downstream as well. So I think this planning permission mitigates all sort of risk as far as I'm concerned.
It's the first time I heard about the highway's most recent report. So I've made some scribble notes here. Insufficient numbers, ambulance space marked out phase, pedestrian access. And was it bin stores or something like that?
No, it wasn't bin stores. Pedestrian access, manoeuvrability of refuse vehicles.
Okay,
sorry.
Thank you. Councillor Cross.
Thank you, Chairman. You know, Councillor Spencer spoke part of what I want to say, that the fact they're going to build it above the 100-year flood level, plus 50%, the Environment Agency has withdrawn its objections, which is one of the things that had concerned me when I initially helped Councillor Edger to call this in plus the highways withdrew their initial objection, so I can't see we have any grounds to not approve this application. And I would second Councillor Beattie's proposal if there's no further discussion.
Anyone else want to chip in? So we've had a proposal by Councillor Beattie, seconded by Councillor Cross, to approve this application with those conditions.
Can I just clarify those two conditions that I read out? One of them is the one about making up the pavement crossing, the existing pavement crossing is already in as condition 9, so we don't need to add that. That's exactly the same wording. Condition 10, that looks to me like we've taken that from the previous permission in anticipation of what highways would say, because as I say, we didn't have a highway recommendation at the time. Their new wording is slightly different, so rather than an additional condition, we'll just consolidate it into that one.
Yes.
If that's all right, Chairman.
Yes, yeah. Okay, if everyone's happy that we've discussed that sufficiently, we have proposed and seconded to approve, let's take that vote. All those in favour?
1, 2, 3, 4, 8 in favour, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. And that is approved. With that. Oh, right, sorry. Any against? Just one. Yeah. So thank you, that's been approved with that modified condition. And we'll move on to the next item on the agenda. Which is 21353 29, land adjacent 35 Trenchard Avenue, Beaconside. Yeah, got it. Steve, is this yours?
Yes.
Okay, right. We'll have the presentation first. Steve Owen. Are you ready?
Okay. Thank you, Chairman. This is planning application 21353 29, land adjacent to 35 Trenchard Avenue. Planning Commission has sought for a two-storey dwelling house and a new vehicle access. The first plan is the location plan. It shows the extent of the site, which is outlined in red. The site comprises an area of vacant land between neighbouring dwellings number 35 and 37 Trenchard Avenue. This is an area view of the site, which is again outlined in red. The site is set within a residential suburban area, which itself is within the sustainable settlement boundary of Stafford. This is a photo plan which shows the location of the following photos. Image one, this is looking northwest within the site towards Trenchard Avenue. Image two is looking towards the side and rear of the neighbouring dwelling number 37. Image 3 is looking towards the side and rear of number 35. Image 4 is looking at the side elevation of number 37. Image 5 is looking at the side elevation of number 35. Image 6 is looking eastwards towards the rear of the site. Image 7 is looking towards the site from Trenchard Avenue. Image 8 is looking towards the neighbouring dwellings number 35 and number 33. Image 9 is looking towards the neighbouring dwellings in the other direction. Image 10 is looking towards Trenchard Avenue from the verge in front of the site. Plan number one, this shows the proposed elevations and the floor plan for the two-storey dwelling. Plan 2 shows the proposed site plan and the new vehicle access. Plan 3 shows the proposed bin store. And Plan 4 shows the existing and proposed street frontage. In summation of the report, the proposed dwelling is considered acceptable in principle due to its location within the sustainable settlement boundary of Stafford. The proposal on balance is also considered acceptable in terms of its visual impact on the character and appearance of the area. The development is acceptable in terms of its impact upon trees, neighbouring amenity, parking provision, and highway safety, subject to conditions. Subject to the appropriate special area conservation contribution being secured, the development's impact upon the Cannock Chase SAC would be mitigated. There is an update to the officer's report in your agenda. The report states the contribution should be secured via a Section 106 agreement. There is now an alternative Section 111 agreement, which could also secure the contribution. Subject to a resolution to approve planning permission, the applicant will have the option of providing a contribution via either a Section 106 or Section 111 agreement. With this in mind, the planning application is therefore recommended for approval, subject to the recommended conditions and the SAC contribution being secured via a legal agreement.
Thank you very much, thank you. We do not have a anyone in support of this, and we don't can we have one objector? Sonia Gill? Sonia, you have 3 minutes. We'll let you know when you're 2 minutes in.
Thank you for the chance to make me speak. My name is Shina and I live at 35 Chatshard Avenue, which is adjacent to the plot that is being proposed to go on. We noticed something when looking at the planning permission that was a bit of incorrect information. It states in the uses that the Mallinsons, who proposed the planning permissions, previously lived at 35 Chatshard Avenue and retained the plot upon its sale. Upon seeing this, we did our own further research and found out that the Mallisons did not in fact live at 35 Chatshard Avenue. We've lived there since 2005 and bought it from its previous owners, and while looking at the land registry data, we concluded that the applicant never lived at 35 Chatshard Avenue. So we have an issue with that when it comes to permission, as we believe the information can be incorrect, and we believe that it may be a dishonest way of being granted the planning permission. In addition to that, several years earlier, there was an application to have property built on 35A. However, it was rejected due to sewage reasons. And as far as my knowledge goes, nothing has been done to change the reasons for that rejection several years ago. So for those reasons, we strongly object to the planning permission being granted.
You're not up to your 3 minutes yet, so if you wish to add any more or repeat anything, you're welcome to do so.
Okay,
well, thank you very much. Thank you. No other speaker on that apart from Councillor Louise Nixon, who's called this application in. Would you like to take a seat, please?
A precedent has been set and other people have been refused similar applications. It is seen that the spaces have been left by the builders in a specific pattern, and I've had a chat to Jack about this, and we're both wondering and querying why the gaps are there. Is there something we need to be made aware of before any decision making? and there's residents talking about sewage. There's something amiss with why the pattern's there, what's going on underneath the ground that needs to be looked into. Thank you.
Okay, right, thank you. In respect of the land ownership, is this something that we can comment on?
Well, in terms of land ownership, when you submit a planning application, the applicant would have had to have signed a land ownership certificate. When signing it, they would have declared that by signing it they were being truthful, and if not truthful, there is a penalty, financial, I believe.
So, can we pursue that? Anything we can do to substantiate one way or the other?
That's an offence to.
Sonia, could you just return to the table, please? We just need some clarification from you.
Oh, yes.
In terms of your question about the ownership of the plot,
yes.
Is it your view that the applicant does not own that plot?
I'm not 100% sure, because I've seen the applicant going back and forth. He had a garden there previously. That's why I'm not that sure. We did get our land registry of documentation.
Yeah, I mean, just to sort of interrupt, you don't have to own a plot in order to put a planning application in for it.
Yes.
As long as you serve notice on the owner of the plot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, it's my dad. Speaking on behalf of them. Yeah, it's just because within the planning application, it's in the uses section, it's the very first paragraph, it says that the current proposed dwelling plot is located in the infill plot, which was also previously owned by the Manderson family. The plot was retained by the Mandersons on their sale of number 35, with the plot now having the benefit of independent registration of stamp registry.
But he never lives at number 35.
That's our issue with it, so.
He lives at number 37. But with this one, I don't know why he put this number 35.
Yeah. So that's assessment state.
You live at number 35.
We live at number 35.
Yeah, we checked with the neighbours and we did the land. It never lives at number 35. So I don't know why he put number 35 on his planning permission.
Yeah.
The factual information is incorrect.
Yeah. Is it possible that the applicant put in the wrong number by any chance?
No, it could be possible, but the factual information, the initial information is wrong.
Right, okay. We'll move on and we will try and move towards determining this application. So, any one of the committee members like to speak? Councillor Spencer.
You mentioned that the previous application was turned down on sewage issues. Is the spaces in there because there was a main sewer potentially running through that area? You see it lines up with the road further on to the west. I mean, is that possibility why it was turned down in the first place? Or do we know why it was turned down?
So, for this site, there are two points really to your question. First point, I'm unaware of any planning application on this site. Completing the plot, I found no relevant planning application for the site. Any concerns about sewage or drainage, the threshold at which you would consult the local flood authority, for example, is 10 dwellings. This is for a single dwelling. It's also located within flood zone 1, which has the lowest likelihood of flooding.
I think my point was it's an underlying service, and that's why there's a space there, not to do with actual flooding or anything on the surface, but what's underneath the ground, and that's why there's a space there.
John might be able to correct me, but we wouldn't know that.
We're going to know what's under the ground.
Okay.
And there's no record of a planning application on this site, or no planning history?
Not during the completion of this report.
Councillor Louise Nixon, if you're clarifying a point, I can let you speak, otherwise...
Just reinforcing that the word historically, I mean, Jack's been here since about 1974, and I would agree with what he is saying, that historically there has been planning application refused, and that the builders have left it in that pattern for the reason. So we really do need to explore what that reason is before any decision making.
But the officer report says that it is suitable for development, albeit that there may be some history as to why it was left vacant before. Was it an allotment plot of some sort?
That's what the applicant states we didn't know.
It was previously an allotment plot. I think there's a lot of questions here that we can't give you positive answers to. So I'm minded that we discuss this, or people might want to come to a decision where we don't discuss it or we defer it, but I think we need to get the ball rolling. Councillor Frank James.
I think that we should defer this because there's too much grey area here. We haven't got the proper answers, have we? We need the answers. And if we can't have them, I don't think we can make a decision.
In terms of the land ownership, that wouldn't be a reason why we should defer it.
Chairman, if you're going to take a vote on deferring it, we need to be clear what you want to defer it for what reason.
I think we've got to defer it for two reasons. One, it was refused before, and we don't seem to have the answers why it was refused before, which is very important. And secondly, regarding the sewerage and all that, you say you don't know what's underneath. Why wasn't it built on in the first place?
We're not going to be able to answer why it wasn't built on in the first place. So if there's no point in deferring it for that reason, because we're not going to be able to come back with an answer on that.
Councillor Beattie.
Can I just say, Jim, that the one thing I do welcome in this, and it's not a case of infill, and I quite like whilst John was on policy is on infill, but the one thing I do welcome is the officers' comments that they've taken some consideration in terms of design. I think that's a good thing. We'd like to see more of it. So in that sense, I would certainly think that it is an appropriate application.
Any more
speakers?
Okay,
thank you.
Okay.
Second that.
Sir James?
Did you
for you,
Chair? Councillor Beattie, did you move that as a decision? I think I will now.
You're proposing approval.
I'm
seconded
approval.
By Councillor Roy James. Councillor Frank James, you suggested deferment. There's no one going to second that.
Could I ask a question, please, Chair? Is there any way of finding out if there are any underground sewers under that ground? Because if there isn't, there's no point deferring it.
Well, it has been proposed and seconded to approve the...
It's still moved in amendment, yeah. Chair, if someone was minded to and it was seconded.
About underground.
There would need to be a good reason, if the planning reason for deferring. Is that a planning reason?
If hypothetically there are pipes or wires or something underground, it doesn't necessarily mean you can't build on the site. It might mean you need to modify how you build something. Seven Trent will have records of where they think the pipes are. But in terms of other ground conditions, we wouldn't know. Seven Trent do comment on some applications, but we've got nothing on this one. So I think if they were concerned, they would probably have commented.
Okay.
It's the MOD, not Southern Trent.
Okay. Yes, I will. Okay. Councillor Kenny?
Can I just ask a question with regards to the actual application itself? If there's some doubt on the ownership, and if we are to determine this evening, and it turns out that the application was not correctly filled in, or permission wasn't given from the landowner, what would happen to the planning application then?
The planning application is not a personal permission, so it applies to the land and not to an individual.
But doesn't falsifying the planning application, what's the legal ground on that?
To submit, I think as Steve said earlier, as to submit a planning application, you don't have to own the land, but you do have to sign a certificate.
Yeah.
So if you're not the owner, you potentially sign certificate B saying you're not the owner, but you've served notice on the owner. There's also certificate C and D, which can apply if you don't know all the owners of the land, if you know some and not all. If somebody has made a false declaration, they've committed an offence, and they could be liable to prosecution. But that, ultimately, that doesn't make a difference in terms of planning permission. If they're not the owners of the land, and they don't purchase it, they can't legally implement the planning permission anyway.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, right, so it has been proposed for approval by Councillor Beattie, seconded by Councillor Roy James. All those in favour of approving the application?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Mr. Chairman.
And seven. Against?
3, 4.
Okay, that is approved. Now move on to planning application 21-35138, former Eagle Inn. Car park at Newport Road, previously deferred. Right, now only those people who were involved or those councillors who were involved previously can take part in this. Those who can't take part are Councillor Cross, Councillor Frank James, Councillor Marty Phillips, and Councillor Dean McNaughton. If you could just step back and have a seat against the wall, please. Councillor Cross, you have to, please.
Do we all want to leave?
No.
So, is everyone here who can be here?
I'm replacing you.
You need to remove as well. So we're down to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and myself, 7. Okay. Presentation on this application. We have been over it a number of times, so I don't suppose we want to go over it all over again. We'll go over the highlights.
Thank you, Chairman. This application was presented to committee at the last meeting on the 19th of July. When it was deferred, as the presentation showed an earlier version of some of the plans. The report in the agenda is the same as previously, as the previous meeting on the 19th of July, except for the wording of condition 2, which is the plans condition, and the informative. The site is within the settlement boundary of Eckershaw, and the principle of development has been established by an outline planning permission permitted in 2020. For up to 2 dwellings, and that approved the access only. This reserved matters application seeks approval for appearance, landscaping, layout, and the scale of development. Permission is sought for two detached dwellings, both comprising four bedrooms. The dwellings are 2.5 storeys in height and each has a driveway, turning area and parking spaces. The roof space of each dwelling contains a bedroom and a bathroom served by roof lights. The site is situated close to Eccleshill Conservation Area, but it does not fall within the conservation area. Conservation officer was consulted and raised concerns to the proposal primarily on the basis of the size. Amended plans were received reducing the scale of the proposed dwellings, and whilst the conservation officer maintained her objection, it's considered that the scale of the two dwellings is now acceptable having regard to the backdrop of Spring Hollow. The ridge height of the proposed dwellings is comparable with the heights of the properties on Spring Hollow. Adequate garden and parking provision is provided for each dwelling, and the front elevations would face towards Newport Road. Just to draw your attention to page 47 of the report, where it says that the rear elevation of plot 1 would be 18 metres from the rear of 16 Spring Hollow. On the amended plans that are now shown on this presentation, that is now extended to 18.9 metres, so it's an additional 0.9 metres, whilst the distance from the rear elevation of plot 2 would be extended from 6.7 to 7.2 metres from the gable end of 14 Spring Hollow, that's another half metre. No principal windows are proposed for the first floor rear elevation. These windows serve bathroom and ensuite, but a condition is recommended to make sure these windows are obscurely glazed and therefore no residential amenity issues have been raised. Given the scale of the dwellings, a condition is recommended to remove permitted development rights to control any further extensions to the dwelling. Looking now at the images. So the red lines, site boundary. Shows the aerial photograph. And then there are five photos, the same five that you saw last time. So first one is a view looking south towards the site. So this is at the northern end of the site looking in a southerly direction. This is taken from near to the junction of Spring Hollow and Newport Road. Spring Hollow junction is just to the left of the photograph. Image 3 is this time looking in the northerly direction across the development site. You can, so you can see on this photograph the side elevation of number 17 with the two windows in the gable end, and then the 2.5 storey property you can see behind the red car is numbers 15 and 16 Spring Hollow. This photograph is taken a little bit further along Newport Road, and this time it shows the access into the car park, and in addition to, 15 and 16 are slightly obscured now, but you can see the gable end of number 14 Spring Hollow. That is a two-storey property. And then finally, this one perhaps shows the relationship slightly better. So the gable end I've just referred to is just to the right of the red or orange car. The 15 and 16 Spring Hollow, the two dormer windows that you can see above the hedge, trees probably, and then to the right of 12 and 14 Spring Hollow, the building with a very large dormer on the roof is number 1 Newport Road. returning the images, that's the location plan again. Number two is a proposed street scene elevation. So the top elevation is in effect the existing situation, and the bottom is the existing with the two proposed houses put on top of. So you can see, for example, block one has a lower ridge height than numbers 15 and 16 Spring Hollow, whereas the ridge line on number 12 and 14 Spring Hollow is pretty much the same as on block two. This is the amended plan. This is revision G. So this is the plan that you didn't see last time. And as I mentioned earlier, it is shown the dwellings furthest, plots one and two, further shrunk from the plan that you did see, and also moved nearer to Newport Road, as I say, in the case of plot one by about 0.9 of a metre, and in the case of the other plot by about half a metre. And this shows the elevations and the floor plans of the properties, plot one and plot two. As you can see, they're very similar house types. In fact, it's basically a handed one. In other words, the opposite way round to the each other. So you can see the relatively small roof lights in the roof line, which I mentioned a proposed condition for. And Chairman, the application is recommended for approval for the conditions listed in the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We have an objector and a supporter. We take the objector first, Karen Dowden. Thank you, Karen. I think you know the rules.
I do.
There you go.
I do, yeah. Hello, everyone. My name's Karen. I live in and represent all the residents of Spring Hollow, the homes that border this proposed development. I get it. I said last time, I get it. If I owned the land, I would build on it too to make money. But we are objecting because of the sheer scale and mass of those two really large houses in relation to our homes. It has been said in all the documentation, not just my words, that the houses are grossly and disproportionately large for the size of the plot. I really understand that the builder wants to maximise profit, that's fine. But all that we're asking for is real consideration for those of us who are living next to the proposed houses. Yes, there are some tall houses there already, but they do not overshadow us at all. These new houses will, without a doubt. Mine and my neighbour's houses are two stories high, and the new plans to build are two and a half, really three stories high if you look at them. And the roof line of one of the houses on plot two is taken from number one Newport Road, which sits on a hill 6 foot above our homes. So plot two will simply overwhelm my house and that of my neighbour. If you build these two large houses, we're going to lose significant sunlight to habitable rooms and gardens. We'll have no direct sunlight after midday. We'll face significant loss of privacy, even though you say there'll be frosted glass. And a local estate agent who I've talked to has actually confirmed that this development, because it will overshadow our homes, will considerably affect the value of our homes. I am sorry, but we don't feel that the builders have really made any attempt to compromise on the side of the house. The conservation officer agrees. They've said that the amendments are very minor. They reduce the overall height of the houses by 25 centimetres, the width by 45 centimetres, the size of this piece of paper, and the new amendments are 50 centimetres away from the existing smaller. They are
one
so
minute,
minor.
Karen.
We agree that the conservation officer said that they could perhaps substitute the proposal with two smaller homes. And in fact, opposite there is a bungalow on exactly the same size plot that would mirror it very well. There are very few opportunities for Eglians to downsize into smaller properties, and a bungalow on this property, on this site, would address the need. There's no shortage of executive homes in the village. We've got Sonsay Grange, Hope Grange, and there's a massive new garden village proposed of nearly 500 homes. Just finally, I'm asking you, could you just not build such large houses on that tiny plot? Anyone who knows the area will agree.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We also have a supporter, David Woodfine. If you'd like to step up.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm David Woodfine, director at Charlie Woodfine Architects. Basically, we've got a reserve matters application following the outline approval, as John said, for up to two dwellings. And this approval shows two detached dwellings in more or less the same location, with two vehicular access drives off Newport Road, and vehicular access, turning, parking and egress all approved as part of the outline. Since the application was validated, there have been numerous amendments resulting in significant reduction in the size of dwellings. Basically, there have been, it's not just kind of the size of an A4 piece of paper. I think that since it first went in and it was called in, I think the porch has come in by about 2 metres and the width of the dwelling has come in by about 1.5 metres. The depth of the dwelling and the heights have all reduced, sort of, so there's a kind of cumulative reduction there. Not just the lady just was talking about the latest round of reductions. The proposals are supported by the council now as being acceptable, and we've also agreed specifications for high quality materials, flush pointed bricks, aluminium windows and so on, and clay roof tiles. The site sits outside of Eccleshall Conservation Area and comprises of an unsightly car park formed from loose stone with a backdrop of rear garden fences, which isn't the most positive thing on a significant frontage into a main highway into Eccleshall. And the long frontage onto Newport Road is say a primary route in. The proposed dwellings would provide attractive frontages and deliver substantial visual improvements to that approach.
1 minute, David. Thank you.
The proposed dwellings are appropriate to the context and set back by around 7 metres, which is a similar distance to adjacent dwellings across between the proposed developments in Spring Hollow to the north. The proposed dwellings are also similar in height, scale and massing to the adjacent dwellings, and the proposed ground floor levels are lower than the existing dwellings to the east and south. Each dwelling has private rear and side gardens exceeding 120 metres. All separation distances exceed space about dwelling standards by a significant amount, and all rear-facing windows above ground floor are non-habitable bathrooms and stairwells with obscure glazing. The proposed ridge and eaves heights are 5 and 9 metres respectively, half metre lower than the adjacent dwellings.
Can you wrap it up now for me, please?
Yes, last paragraph, is that okay?
Yeah. Last
paragraph, is
yes,
that okay?
Yeah.
The space between dwellings and plot sizes varies substantially along Horse and Newport Road, but the proposed dwellings are appropriate and sit well within this range. Similarly, the spacing between the dwellings ranges from 2 metres up to 12 metres, and the proposed dwellings are 9 metres apart, so there's quite substantial gaps.
OK, I'd like to ask you to wrap there. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. Right, this has been called in by Councillor Peter Jones, but you do not wish to speak there. You wish to retain your seat in the committee. Is that correct?
Yes, because the views expressed and the calling were those of the Eccleshall House Council and the residents.
Echoing those views.
Yeah.
Can I?
Yes.
Sorry, I said a bit picking up oddments, but on page 49, on the original response, 15%, it says the inn itself does not have any car parking. It's referring to the Eagle. Within its curtains, but does benefit from a reasonable sized car park adjacent to the Sabbath. There isn't another car park in Ecclesfield apart from the Eagle one and the one behind the co-op, which is nowhere near the new road. So it's just, it just annoys me when there's something wrong with the planning application. That's not right. I mean, I've lived there for 30 years, and there isn't another car park. I don't know what they're referring to. The car park is 30 metres away on the Newport Road. There's nothing on it. It's a house. Yeah.
So you're saying that the inn itself does not have any car parking within its curtilage?
No.
But
But I would just stress, I mean, it's not my views, as I said, but I know the Parish Council were concerned exactly what was said here, that there's overmassing, it was going to be bigger. And there's no doubt about it from what's been said by the gentleman before, that they're going to be wonderful houses, maybe not in that site, I don't know. I'm in two minds, to be honest.
Do we not get to question the speaker for the proposal?
Well, we've had the objector and the supporter, now it's open for committee. So I'm just seeing who went first. Was it Councillor Spencer or Councillor Reid?
Councillor Reid.
Yeah.
Well, I wondered about the developer or the architect. Thought of the conservation officer's concerns. I know the scheme is outside of the conservation area. I've certainly heard objections from neighbours about its appearance and its size. As I understand it, the conservation officer's concerns remain.
Councillor Spencer?
Yeah, I have sort of concerns on the sort of layout and scale, really, echoing what's been said previously with the size of the actual floor plan, not even necessarily the height, but the actual space they take up and the area of garden that is left, which seems to be significantly below what the council would recommend for a dwelling, what, 5 bedrooms. Bearing in mind that the majority of gardens are driven by car park space, the area at the back is, 3-4 metres wide, if that. Which means the gardens, in proportion to the size of the building, are disproportionately small. And I would think that a scale wise, smaller footprint house would be more appropriate in this setting.
Any speakers anymore?
Chairman, if I can just. Go back to Councillor Spencer on that. I understand what you're saying in relation to the footprint of the building in terms of the garden area, but the plans show for plot 1 a garden of 112 square metres and for plot 2 106.
What
our policy is 65, so it's well in excess of that.
I think, well, our neighbouring council area can for 4 plus, they're looking at 80 square metres now. And I'm just thinking, what is actually usable garden? Is that including fronts as well? Is that including the green landscaping around car park areas? Which is to me.
Well, it doesn't include the car parking though.
It doesn't, but it does include the front garden as well. If a usable garden to me is the rear garden and not on a main road for children.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the architect's plans here and reading off the figure that it shows, so it looks to me like it includes the garden to the side, the rear and the small element to the front. Obviously look to the footpath. Just one other point, Councillor
Jones.
Yes, thank you. You're reading from the page 49. The inn itself does not have any car parking within its curtilage, but does benefit from a reasonably sized car park adjacent to the southeast, approximately 30 metres away. So, am I right in thinking that the pub was situated on the corner of jail box or spare Newport Road?
Yes. Still here.
Yeah. Well, the car park that's referred to is this application. Because if you look back...
So when they built the houses on there, that's still going to be allowed people to park on there?
No, it's not saying... No, that's not what it's saying. It's describing the location of the pub in the conservation area. So, right. We go back to this plan. The pub is here. So I can't see it on there. Is here, and 30 metres to the southeast is this site. So,
right.
All she's doing there is telling you the setting of the car park in relation to the pub. It's not saying there's another car park.
So, that's just describing what it is now?
Yes.
It's just not clear to me, so.
Yeah, that's why I'm clarifying.
No, thank you for that. Thank you.
So if this were to be developed, there would be no car park.
Yes,
that would disappear.
So I think the point being made that they've got a pub with no car park, which is a point.
Councillor Roy James, did you?
Yeah. Could you pull up the site layout superimposed on the...
That one?
No, keep going.
That one.
These two bits of land seem to be to the on the drawing to the south and the bit to the north. What are we going to do with that? Can I stand up or not? I can stand up.
Which bit are we looking at? This here. Those.
This bit here.
Yeah.
And that bit there.
That's visibility
displays
for the access.
Is that all it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
So what you can see here is that's the edge of Newport Road. This is a pavement here.
Right.
And then
so
there's a grass verge the other side of that. So it's showing visibility displays off
the plot.
Yeah.
The
access here.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, John. Mm-hmm.
Councillor Spencer.
Sorry, Gary, can I just confirm that the loss of sunlight is a material consideration in planning? Is that correct?
Sorry, say
that. The loss of light
is
a material consideration in planning?
It can be.
So the concerns for the property in the rear of plot 2 are legitimate with regards to the loss of sunlight? Light, let me say.
So, let's go back to... Okay, so you've got
14. Sorry.
Yeah, 14. 14 is the side elevation, though. So that what you're looking at there is the gable.
Yes, where they have a window.
I think it does. Oh, there we go. So yes, you can see. Oh, it's a better picture. There you go. Yes, it's got a. Window at first floor. Now, I don't know what kind of a window it is. It might be a bathroom or something like that.
And first floor as well?
Yeah, there is first and second floor windows.
There's one just behind the fence and they're just poking out. So there's two windows that could be potentially affected by the building sat in front of them, potentially.
Not principal windows.
So what rooms do they serve?
I don't know what rooms they serve.
Sorry, somebody shouted out.
The loss of light will be exposed, those two windows, the whole of the frontages to 12 and 14, and number 15, the rear of that house. And in fact, all those houses there will be completely, there'll be no sunlight.
Yeah, but sorry, I was asking what room the windows are for.
What are windows for?
No, what room are they on?
What do they serve?
What do they serve? Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's unfortunate that the applicant really hasn't taken on board the observations of the conservation officer. I really do think that in this particular location. I've written a note here, something less imposing and more impressive would be a scheme that I think should have been considered. I'm disappointed that the conservation officer couldn't have more weight to their argument because it lies outside of the conservation area. Notwithstanding, the applicant can of course decide to change. But that's not what we're here for tonight. We have to decide this application. Councillor Reid.
So just adding to the comments of Councillor Spencer on the light and loss of the light, it strikes me these two houses are creating a back to backs. Quite very nice back to backs, but back to backs.
Councillor Tony Nixon.
Are we in a position to refuse this application because of the height of these dwellings?
Height in itself, no.
Because that seems to be the major objection from the people.
I think if you added in a few more things like massing, scale, proximity or things like that, could that work?
Well, you've got to consider a number of things here, and so looking at the, as I said before, looking at the 15 and 16, which are the ones that face towards the rear of plot one. And that is 18.9 metres away. So they're both 2.5-storey houses, both existing plots. Both existing 15 and 16 and plot one here. So 2.5, i.e. that's 2-storey plus a bedroom in the roof space. In the case of 15 and 16, they've got 2 dormer windows that you can see on photograph above the bushes. Whereas on this proposal, plot one, and for that matter plot two, they are roof lights, so less prominent in that sense, and also the roof lights don't really provide much of a overlooking possibility as well. So to answer Councillor Nixon's question, in itself height isn't a reason for refusal. It depends on what the height does. Now, and that's why the plan 2, I think it was, is relevant, because that shows the relative heights of these two plots compared with the properties on Spring Hollow. So plot 1 is, as I say, actually lower than 15 and 16, and plot 2 is the same height as 12 and 14 to the ridge. So they're not, you can't say that they're dominating in the sense of towering above or anything like that, because clearly they're not. Yes, light can be an issue, but in terms of sunlight, we look at the so north is at the top of that plan. Sunrise is in the east, which is to the right, goes around, goes to the south in an arc and sets in the west. So in terms of sunlight, yes, it has an impact, but late in the day. But most of the sort of midday sun is directly from the south. So I know there's a difference between light and sunlight, but just in terms of sunlight, it will have a relatively limited effect on the gardens of those properties. In terms of light, then clearly it has some effect, because at the moment they've got boundary fence and bushes, etc., and that's all that limits the light.
Mr. Chairman, it's the old problem. I live on an estate that previously was a field, and the people to the left of me had a wonderful field to look at. And the people, the street back from them had a field to look at. And it's unfortunate that if you live in a house that's a field to one side of you, there's a chance that something's going to happen. And what's happened here is something that's unpleasant for the people who are living behind it. And it maybe doesn't overshadow, but it's suddenly in the way, isn't it? And whether that's a reason to, you know.
The proposal is residential development for two dwellings which already have outline permission, and it's in respect of landscaping, layout and scale. So it's up to you to decide whether you think is that appropriate or not.
For you, Chair, just as a point of for committee, if you are minded to refuse, you'll have to have a really good planning reason to substantiate any refusal, because if this would likely go to a field and we would probably get costs awarded against us. This is an outline permission already.
So no one's proposed anything as yet. Is anyone likely to do so?
I think, Mr. Chairman, notwithstanding what I've heard so far, I think there is always going to be a case of NIMBYism. And whilst I accept that the perception is that it would be obtrusive, I can't see that that's a reason for turning down an application which the officers have approved. And I think going forward, if we were to refuse this application, I suspect there would be an appeal. So it already has outline planning permission for two dwellings. Unless you throw this out and say, right, okay, forget it, and you have to submit new plans for, say, smaller properties.
Are you proposing approval?
I'm proposing to approve.
That proposal there, so is anyone likely to second that? Would anyone want to second that?
Chairman, it's unfortunate that we find that the committee finds itself in a position, irrespective of the residents, in a position where we're going to worry about whether we're going to get barristers' fees if they go to appeal, which is unfortunate. You know, we shouldn't have to make a decision based on, oh well, if we go the wrong way to go to court and then.
I think what it means is that you need to have a sufficiently robust reason.
Oh yes, agreed. Yes.
So it doesn't mean you shouldn't refuse it if that's what you believe is the right thing to do, providing that you've got a reason that will stand up.
Yeah, yeah.
Councillor
Spencer. Again, this is outstanding, right, isn't it? We should lay out the state. And I'm going to reiterate again, I think it's the layout and the scale which is the problem. Two buildings on there, fine, that they are going to, it's going to be approved as it's already been approved. It's the size of the buildings that are on there. And that's what we're deciding, isn't it? It's the layout and the scale. So for me, it's the layout, the scale, and the matting is inappropriate in size for that plot. Good. Yes, two buildings, but not to that size.
I hear what you say, but you need to translate that into a reason for refusal if that's what you want to do.
You need to demonstrate the planning harm that will be done if it's approved.
Light is a consideration. It's not, and massing, is a
consideration.
And loss of high heater
houses.
That's not. Massing and light,
is that a
consideration? Is that a planning consideration? So it's a planning consideration.
You describe massing in itself doesn't describe what the harm is.
Scale. If the material considerations we're looking at are the layout and the scale,
yes,
and that's what we're, and then we have an issue with that.
Yeah.
Then, and we're thinking maybe a smaller building would be more appropriate. How would that be?
I think what John's trying to get to is what is the inappropriateness of the massing and the scale. What's the harm that would result?
Well, for me, I see lights straight away as one. And if anyone else wants to propose further, then.
If you're going to refuse the application, we need to define what the harm is. Mm-hmm. So, if it's light, it's light to what?
Mm-hmm.
What the impact of that is?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the applicant wants to appeal, he needs to know what he's appealing against. So, it needs to be specific, and it also needs to relate to policy as well. Now. Again, light can be part of a reason, potentially, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to demonstrate, as Lee said, what the harm is.
Councillor Kenny?
Yeah, policy, everyone, perhaps Staffordshire, I mean, it says it in the amenity section here, requires the design and layout and development to take into account the noise and committed to this consideration, but the light implications and the amenity of the adjacent residential areas, I think the massing and the size of this, does actually go against this policy, in our opinion, or in my opinion.
Sorry, which policy?
It reduces the amenity of light to adjacent properties.
N1.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm just reading from page 47, basically. There's a statement saying that it, you know.
So you're looking at part E there, is that right? Require the design and layout to take account of the noise and light implications together with amenity of adjacent residential areas.
So, Councillor Spence, are you suggesting refusal?
I'm proposing refusal, yes.
Any seconder on that?
No.
Those grounds or those type of words?
I don't think we've got a ground yet at the moment.
Okay.
You need to be clear.
If I just read that part again, N1E says require the design and layout to take account of noise and light implications together with the amenity of adjacent residential areas or operation of existing activities. So, are you saying that the applicant hasn't taken account of light implications?
Certainly for 14, yes.
But so this goes back to my question about asking, because it's a gable, if that was the front elevation, I understand, 15 metres or whatever,
yeah.
But it's a gable end. That's why I'm asking what the windows are.
I think the problem is if you look at when the plan is superimposed over 14, it actually goes beyond the front elevation of 14.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's not. I can understand that comment if it was in
so
line.
So if I go back to the layout plan.
That
one.
Not that. It's a better one, though, isn't it, than that?
So this is 14.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, it overlaps. That's, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And what's
so
that? What's that distance?
Broadly level at the back,
mm-hmm.
but it comes forward at the front there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Councillor Kenny and then Councillor Reid.
We talk of gable ends, but when you look at the image 5.
Yeah.
The actual frontage is not much further back than the gable end, is it?
Image 5. So yes, you can see on there you've got the door is nearest to the corner on the ground floor, and then they've got two windows above that. So yes, it's, what did I say, it was 15?
7, isn't it?
Sorry, no, 7.2 metres, so yeah. Okay.
Councillor Reid?
So I was going to ask, what about the light amenity of these two properties? In the sense of what's the usable. They look to me, they're at the very. I've heard that the dimensions are meet the minimum requirements. Do they face east? Do those gardens face east? So the gardens of the two properties proposed, if they face east, there'll be a darkness from very early in the day.
East just to the right of the plot.
East
just to the right.
So face southeast.
So go back to the.
So the sun rises on the back gardens, I think. Is that right?
So if you look at that plan, the sun rises at the right and then sets
so
at the left.
They face west.
Any more reasons to refuse? Because that's what you will need. Councillor Tony Nixon?
I haven't heard another reason, but I think the ones that have been given are sufficient, in as much as maybe the developer might consider this. Design again, come back with something more appropriate rather than going to appeal.
Well, this is at least the fourth amended plan I've seen. They start, as I think the architect said, it started out with larger plans, with larger floor space, and they've shrunk both the depth and the width of the dwellings, and put them further from the boundary. Now, the first plan that came in was refusable, and there's been incremental changes. So if this had been the first plan in front of you, it was, they were somewhat bigger than this, that probably neighbours first saw. We've got to the stage where, as I said, the officers believe it's got to the scale where it becomes acceptable. Now obviously you may have a different view from that, that's fine. But whether, I don't know, what I'm saying is I don't think that deferring it's going to make the architect go away and draw completely different plans. Might do, but there's no guarantee that will happen. And of course in the meantime, you could appeal against non-determination.
As the architect is present, and you can choose to answer or not answer, would you be minded to revisit the design of these properties?
Well, I think we have, as John said, numerous times, and it's difficult. It's a very specific site, which is very long and narrow, and we can't do much about that. And what I would just say is that what we've done is create active frontages, and some of this, all the space about dwellings dimensions are exceeded by quite a long way. And I just take the point that Spring Hollow number 14 normally has sort of a gable to gable or a non-principal to non-principal elevation on a housing estate or anywhere else, and they'd be cheap by jowl, 2 metres apart with ensuite windows or whatever. And this is 7 metres apart, and the other one is, as John said, 19 metres apart. They're well above the kind of 13 and a half and 2 metre norms, so I don't really see, I think it's a case of you can't narrow the plan because what we've done is, as with all good design, the principal rooms on the front elevation, because that's its face, and you put the kind of bathrooms, ancillary stairs and things like that on the back elevation where they're not overlooking anyone, and that's the back of house. And, you know, we've acknowledged, you know, as I say, the cumulative improvements and putting the porches, setting them back in 2 metres, pulling the whole development closer to the road, and making workable rear gardens. And so it exceeds all the space for dwellings by some measure. I understand it's confusing when sometimes you see a side or a gable adjacent to the back of the house, but there are no principle to principles there. It's essentially like two gables that you see in everyday life and all over the place. So I can understand the kind of confusion, but it is, you know, way within standards. So, and it's very difficult to design. You know, what do we do now? It's 7 metres wide, that plot, which is just enough for a kind of modest four metre bedroom and a 2 metre bathroom, and then wall thicknesses. You can't really make it any slimmer. You know, it's just it's a function of the site and trying to do the right thing in urban design terms. And really, it is what it is. So we've got no choice really but to forward, you know, progress in the beam. Yeah, we've got nowhere else to go. We've worked with the officers, and they've just taken all the people wanted. But we've worked positively with the officers to get to that point.
So basically, you're not minded to revisit it?
Well, I think I would say we don't really have anywhere to go. It's difficult to revisit because we've tried several times.
I mean, I'll just throw my two pennies in. It's just that on this main road, it occupies quite a prime position, and whether it could be some improvement in terms of street scene.
The street scene is accepted frontage, it's got porches, it's got principal windows. There are gaps between these houses exceeding 9 metres. So, you know, they're not cheap by gel between the houses. There's light and what have you. And it's not a closed in, boxed in development by any stretch.
Okay, right, thank you. Councillor Spencer, and then we'll.
I would say maybe the issue what we're dealing with here, maybe the architect as well, is the developer said, right, I want 5-bedroom house on this plot, fit them in. And that's why, oh, we can't possibly make them smaller because we've got to get 5 beds in. Now, if there were 2 3-bed properties, I'm pretty sure those houses would be smaller. The floor plans would be smaller because they haven't got the requirement for the same amount of floor space. So I think the problem we're hemmed in by is, I want 2 5-bedroom properties on this site, fit them in. And I think there's been no consideration as to how that would work on that space, in my opinion.
Okay. Councillor Kenny, you were first, and then Councillor Lord James.
I only have a problem with one of the properties. That is the more southerly one, is it? The one nearest to 14. I think the other one is far enough away from the other buildings and doesn't encroach on them.
So it's plot 2, the southerly plot that you're concerned is, okay.
I'd be happier if that was more though. I don't have any problem with the other one because it is far enough away.
Can I just in terms of what Councillor Spencer's just said, I understand his point, but they are 4-bedroom, these actually they're not 5. So just need to bear that in mind.
3 bedrooms on the second and the first floor.
The fourth bedroom is the one on the second floor. So
that's 2 doors up there. Floor plan.
Councillor Reid, did you want to speak
rooms,
again?
There's two rooms either side there on the second floor.
So you've got bedrooms 1, 2, and 3 at the front of the first floor, and bedroom 4 is
What's the other room?
Bathroom.
Okay.
Right. So I think we've given that enough airing.
I was just going to say that I think the difficulty we all have is articulating sound reasons for refusal.
Yep.
We're going round the houses, if you'll excuse the expression, and not coming up with what I call sound reasons for refusal.
Okay, so we've had one proposal to approve but not seconded. One to refuse, seconded, but we can't get our words around it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to redetermine, isn't it? We can make that. But I mean, I'd be happy to amend that proposal that the plot one, I'm happy with that, but plot two needs to be revised.
Problem is, we can't approve part and refuse part, but okay. Do it the whole application. Otherwise, I understand where you're coming from. But I think if you're looking at a reason for refusal, Councillor Kenny did identify an element of policy M1, which could be relevant, but you need to apply it to this case if that's what you want to do.
I think Councillor Kenny's correct that the one to the north appears to be okay. It is the one to the south which is causing the humidity issue with that policy.
Okay, so you could potentially word a reason for refusal relating to plot two. You can name plot two.
Yeah.
Says the impact of that, etc. You don't have to make it relating to both of them.
Obviously the proposal that we made earlier, policy M1, just relates to plot two.
Okay, so so you mentioned
the design and layout, policy M1, design and layout.
Yeah. Design and layout.
The light implications and amenity of adjacent residential.
Okay, but so design and layout, impact on
the adjacent residential.
I think you need to name them. If you're only talking about
plot
two,
number 14.
Okay. So you talk about loss of daylight.
Yes.
Shadowing.
Yes, certainly shadowing. Yeah.
Is amenity of wood.
Anything else?
Is there an issue about privacy? Those two houses, the amenity space and privacy for those two houses. Mentioned by the conservation officer, page 49, as more private amenity space. So the houses behind effectively overlook the gardens of the new houses proposed, and so they, future, do they have a right to amenity space? They have the space, but they are actually, will their garden space be overlooked?
I understand what you're saying. But that's why you need to look at the way the buildings are orientated. So, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, at the first floor, bedrooms 1, 2 and 3 are at the front. So, if I show you on the screen. So, these are bedrooms. That's an ensuite, that's a bathroom, and that's the second ensuite. So those windows at the rear non-habitable rooms,
yeah.
And we're suggesting that they're obscurely glazed,
yeah,
so they're
not
directly overlooked.
That's not what I'm asking. I mean the garden space of these two houses being overlooked by windows of the Spring Hollow houses, and their right to privacy in their garden as an amenity.
Well,
I mean, they're going to be sold as such.
And that's why we're looking at, and the overlooking is basically in relation to plot one, and that's why we're looking at that distance as 18.9 metres. So, that's 60 something feet, isn't it? 60 feet. There's a boundary fence, and as we saw at the moment, there's also...
So the 60 feet is...
18.9 metres, I say there's about 60 foot.
The distance of...
Between... Sorry, I'm going to ask the wrong one. Between numbers 16 and plot 1.
60 foot is the size of plot 1's garden.
So, that's the back elevation of plot 1.
Yeah.
Which, as I say, doesn't have habitable rooms in it. And that is number 16 and... 17, I don't know what
15.
The pairing anyway. So it's 18.9 metres from there to there, and as I say, that's about 60 foot.
Yes.
You've got a boundary fence there, and you've got shrubbery, as you saw from the photographs, along here. So I don't think there's much overlooking of that garden area.
Oh, come on.
So, plot 2, what's listed here?
Plot 2, the distance is 7.2 metres from the rear elevation of plot 2, so the gable of number 14.
And there's no facing windows, because one's got
well,
the gable.
That's the window that we could see on the photograph, but the one I asked about what the room was. So there you can see it.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Am I understanding that effectively what we're deciding or what is being proposed is that plot number one is acceptable, tick in the box, but plot number two needs to be revisited? Is that what we're saying?
I think there's more concern about plot number two than plot number one.
Yeah.
Okay then, so it has been proposed and seconded, and for these reasons raised by Councillor Kenny, light, amenity, design and layout
to
plot number two.
Can I just make one final point, apologies, Chairman. Looking at that photograph there, the house with the quite significant Alandi hedge, which is what coming at least 2 metres over that fence,
mm-hmm.
is presumably going to encroach into plot one's garden significantly and would leave them with little to no garden. Usable garden, because surely we can't be expecting that plot to cut down there, cut back their hedge.
I think that's been out of our control.
It would be
again
an immediately useful.
Harm to number 14, is it?
Yes.
What I've written down so far is, in terms of design layout, impact on number 14. By virtue of loss of daylight and shadowing.
You say overlooking?
Overlooking what? Somebody mentioned overlooking.
I think you're overlooking the front room. It's upstairs. Upstairs.
But there's only bathrooms at the back. Bathrooms en suites on the first floor level. There's one bedroom at the second floor, but it's got roof lights rather than normal windows.
So does everyone understand that if we take the vote now, that that's what we're, our concerns are in respect of plot two? Yeah?
Are we also taking into account, Chairman, your concerns with the conservation officer as well? Or?
I think it's disappointing. Councillor Tony Nixon?
No, I wasn't released from that.
Oh, you didn't? Well, I think you're landed here. One. Okay, so we all understand what we're voting on and the reasons why. And it is to refuse, Councillor Kenny, seconded by Councillor Reid.
Councillor Spencer.
Sorry, the other way around. Councillor Spencer, Councillor Kenny. All those in favour of refusal, please show. Those against? Abstain. One
abstain because of the proposal.
Okay, right. Thank you for your time on that one. And I'm sorry for putting you through such a long process. Leave the room quietly, please. Thank you.
Is there
a chance for a break? Does anyone want a comfort break? Rejoin at 25 to 7, 8 minutes.
Thank you, Jim.